Welcome everyone to this In Conversation event, a matter of life and death and a struggle for gay rights in Uganda. It's an event that is hosted by the University of Cambridge Centre for Gender Studies and the Centre of Governance and Human Rights in the Department of Politics and International Studies, and it's supported very generously by Cambridge University Press. My name is Sharath Srinivasan and I'm from the Centre of Governance and Human Rights. I'm very grateful to the Centre for Gender Studies for inviting us to be co-hosts of this event. It's my great pleasure to introduce David Kato, who is a Ugandan gay rights activist and the Advocacy and Litigation Officer for Sexual Minorities Uganda. He'll be speaking in conversation with Dr. Andy Tucker, who is the Assistant Director for the Centre for Gender Studies. He also has just been recently in Uganda conducting research there, so it's a great opportunity to hear from both of them on what is a very topical and quite alarming situation that has emerged not only now in Uganda but in other parts of Africa, the situation, legal rights and social justice situation facing homosexuals in across Africa. So I hand over to Andy and to David. They'll speak in conversation for about half an hour and then we'll move to question and answers from the floor. Thanks very much.
Well, again, let me just offer my thanks to David for coming to talk to us today in his busy schedule while he's over here in the UK. Perhaps we can just start by discussing the current situation in Uganda and what legislation actually exists against homosexuality.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm grateful to those that invited me to have a talk about the whole issue. I'll be sorry about my accent if you don't follow properly. My accent is typical African. But slowly we shall catch up. The question is about...
The current legislation.
Presently, the law in Uganda is that we have the penal codes, 140, 141 and 143. They are criminalizing what they call canon knowledge against the order of nature. This is in our penal codes. And whereby if you are found guilty of having done what I've said up above, you are entitled to go for life imprisonment. Okay? Even if it's consensual sex, you go for life imprisonment. And if it's just attempted, you can go for 5 years. Okay? There's 5 years, 7 years, and life imprisonment. So the law is already in place to criminalize, okay, even if it's consensual sex, so long as it falls under what they term to be the canon knowledge, that is against the order of nature. That's the situation.
So that's the current situation, but as many people here have been hearing about recently, as many people here would have been hearing about recently, there's also this new legislation which is being put forward, this potential anti-homosexual bill, the Bahati Bill. What exactly is it that does that's different to the current legislation?
Now, what has come up recently is that this law is being changed. It's not even being changed. It's already there, but they are making it worse to bring in the death penalty now. Apart from life imprisonment, it's going further to say if you are found guilty having sex with a MSM or WSW, we understand what I mean, you can go for life imprisonment or death penalty, mostly into what they have termed to be aggravated homosexuality, maybe with someone who is young, or if you're HIV positive, then you go for the death penalty. That's what they want to put in place.
So how does the bill actually, or this proposed bill, define homosexuality? Because it seems to be a very wide-ranging bill.
The confusion is that, I'm really sorry, I don't want to be a bit rude, but the way they are defining homosexuality, they are confusing it with homosexual acts. They have failed to differentiate between homosexuality and homosexual acts. Because if I fall in love with another man, it's consensual, above 18. Okay? And the homosexual act is whereby someone just goes, okay. Again, they are confusing three things. Homosexuality, homosexual acts, and the sexual violence. They have not demarcated the barriers because they know that a man having another man in bed is so bad, so they have not looked at other issues. They have just gone further to begin putting everything together. So where there is consensual sex, the same thing. You go for life imprisonment or you go for death penalty. So really, the way they have defined it, it's a confusion because of what we shall maybe look at in our discussion here, because they have not given themselves time to look at the issues because of some other factors that make them think talking about gay or lesbian is still a sin. According to, they have the right to believe into what they believe anyway.
So the bill has this wide-ranging idea of what homosexuality is, but it also seems to be doing other things as well in terms of wider civil society. It can affect wider heterosexual society as well, can it?
Yes. This bill, I wonder whether we have got chance, all of us, to look at through the proposed anti-homosexuality bill. Otherwise, it's not only going to affect we, the LGBTI community, because it states that there are so many things it states, but it makes matters worse to say that if my landlord knows that I'm gay and he or she doesn't report me within 24 hours, she or he is going also to be arrested. The doctor I go for medication or for treatment, even the counselor, even the teacher, you should tell this kid, this student is gay and is arrested. So it's like the society is to be spying on one another, policing, police, you police towards your neighbor. So for them thinking that they are doing it because of us, it's like they have really forgotten that it's going to bring in a number of even other people. Let's look at the children. It says if you are got into these acts, you go for life imprisonment for all the years. But it never indicated, for example, let's look at the students in schools. They are below 18. They are trying out theirs. They don't know what they really want. We have all gone through there. So if this kid below 18 years is got with another, they have not specified. So the rights of the child is also being put in the same thing. Okay, so it's not only for LGBTI, but it's also going to affect even the others who think they are really pushing us on the wall.
So it is, in effect, creating a police state?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you think the bill is being put forward now?
There are a number of factors. I won't like to look political. I don't want to be misquoted. So I always prefer talking about the battle that I've been through since we started fighting to liberate ourselves, as our mission says. So I don't want to talk about politics. But our president, he has been there. I was still at secondary school, but he's still the president. I'm getting old now, he's still the president. More than 20 years, anyway. And elections are next year. So we don't know whether they are putting up this. Anyway, 85% of Ugandans, they are Christians. 12% are Muslims. Okay? So most people in Uganda, they are religious. And these are the policymakers in parliament. Now, if they bring up this bill now, it makes much noise, all the religious people. They say, no, this is evil. You can't bring it here. So maybe they are trying to divert people's thoughts instead of struggling to fight corruption, the poverty in the people, other important issues. Because I don't see why you should put your nose in my bed, whatever I do with someone on consensual sex, really, into my privacy. It doesn't make sense. So anyway, we don't know whether they are really trying to draw people's attention from sensible and realistic issues to this one. That is the other side. But on this other side, when I'm asked a question like, why the bill now, I've got some aspects that we, as the LGBTI community, that have come up with, that have maybe provoked people to come up with this. Sometime back, 2007, because of the humiliation, in all aspects, they are throwing out children from school, boarding schools. These girls are being thrown out. And in fact, two of them died. The deputy teacher beat up one girl, she died. Another girl was suspended. When she came back, she was beaten by all staff members, even cooks. So she overdosed herself and died. So we said, why can't you leave us to live in peace? like you've seen that poster which you put up. So we camouflaged and went and had a press conference. And the moment we had it, like today, it was in the papers, on TV. The pastors, they went the following day and put up the coalition, the anti-gay coalition against the gay people. The rainbow coalition against the gay people. Rainbow is the color for gay people, as far as I know. So they formed it, the pastors. They saying, "You government, how can you allow these people to even have a press conference? How can you allow them to talk to media?" So because of that, it was bad. Then another issue is that we realize that we are not being put into the government strategies of HIV. We also suffer from HIV, even STDs. So we use this as an entry point to fight for our rights, to get, because we are also taxpayers. We said, please, government, include us into the government policies of HIV we need. Because now when you go to hospital, the moment you begin explaining yourself, tomorrow when you go back, the nurse or the doctor will call everyone. Now you are like a model there. Prejudiced. I don't know if I'm pronouncing right. Prejudice. That stigma, everyone looks. Go and bring your partner. You can't bring another man. They say, "Oh, what is this?" On the other hand, you're even fearing, because the law is against you, you're fearing even to be taken to court and whatever. So we came up to say we want to be included. This also they didn't like. And we made this one worse. 2007, there was an international implementers meeting, HIV international implementers meeting, which was in Uganda. So what this UNAIDS official that had been deported from Uganda in 2004, so he was here in Europe and he told us, you know, implementers, international HIV is in Uganda. So we went in the morning with our posters and things. It was non-violent demonstration. So we stood at the stage, like you were still there. So we stood up here before the meeting started with our papers. We didn't say anything. We said, no, we're also taxpayers. Because the previous day, the chairperson of Uganda AIDS Commission had said in media that, no, we don't have money to put into LGBTI community. But you have money to put into the fishing community and the long vehicle drivers, those big trucks. We say we're also taxpayers, so we went and put up. Before we left, some of our friends were arrested. I'm lucky I escaped. I went to Amnesty. Eventually, UNAIDS and USA, they went to police and say, should release these people. There's nothing they have done that is wrong. But they had refused. Eventually, they were dismissed and the case stayed in court. Eventually, they managed to dismiss the case after pushing so much. But this one also provoked the policymakers and religious leaders the more. How can they? Okay, the question was, why now? So we doing this. Okay, the last one is that recently, religious right people from America, they came, I think you heard, they preached that we are recruiting children. We are recruiting people, children from schools. These US people from USA, they came, they spread this. 2 months, they are there preaching. So a task force was formed. That's why you had so many arrests have been going on. And no wonder one of the arrests, that one guy has just died after getting out of prison. I don't know, maybe we should talk about that later. So this recruiting, we went, again, we had a press conference. We are 4 of us. We said, for us, we are not recruiting. We denied it. Religious leaders, they said, how can they go even ahead and even deny the facts? How can they? So now we are no longer going to. Media doesn't accept anything from us. But the government can always report whatever rubbish they want to talk about us. But for us, we can't put anything in media now, positive on our side. So the dialogue is still a problem. So those are the aspects that I can give why they are reacting. It's because we have fought for our visibility. And the more visible we come, okay, they begin legislating, putting such laws to make us go backwards.
It's interesting what you said about the media as well, because it seems that certain newspapers in Uganda, such as the Red Pepper, seem to be persecuting gay people as well, and that's kind of stirring up the issue as well, would you say?
Some media, they have tried to be a bit... some have changed their attitude. Others... still strange. But about media, I think we have all dealt with media. What they want is money. For them, they print what is going to sell. If you want to sell your paper tomorrow, just put homosexuals have been killed. Everyone is going to buy the paper. They are making money. So that's why the government papers are not writing. Monitor is trying to write, but of late is not also writing. because we had one time we paid money to go for a radio show. Before we entered, they said, excuse us, we shall send you your money. Can you go away before you are arrested? We said, no, we have right. They said, we ran away. Then another time we paid money for an article to come in here. They gave, in the newspapers, we are giving back our money. Because now the government censors all the papers, they shouldn't mention anything about gay rights. This is more because of the Pentecostal churches. I'm not saying all religious people in Uganda are really terrible, but the Pentecostal churches, these pastors who have just come up recently, we don't know what their agenda is. Because even recently, they're demonstrating in different towns. It's like they are fearing people with hate to Hamas. Because for them, they say they are determined to say that we'd go for the death penalty. I wonder where their love is that they are preaching.
So, do you think the bill will pass, this new anti-homosexual bill?
This question I can't read. Oh, okay. To take a bit backwards, this bill is a private member's bill. Okay? This bill is a private member's bill. Members of Parliament, anyone who can come up with something you want to propose. Okay? So that's why the government is dodging that it doesn't have a hand in it. When we learned of the bill in process, we rushed. Of course, we panicked. Like us defenders who have been in this for long, we are really panicking. Because me, I'm educated a bit. I went to school. But there are those that have never gone to school. So we really panicked and we tried to find out what are the contents of the bill. Now, our president recently, sometime back, was at a youth party, and he said, youth, watch out, don't become gay. These people, we know we had them in Africa sometime. They are not persecuted, although they are not encouraged. That's what the president said. And all along, he has been always very bad, talking bad things about homosexuals. Okay? So, eventually now he's changing the attitude that we don't need to be persecuted. He goes further to say, I have nothing to say. The thing is in the MOP's hands because it's a private member's bill. He claims he doesn't have a hand in it. But when he went to Entebbe, government printer, looking for this bill, they said, the bill is here. But you're waiting for the minister. I believe this is funny to you. In Uganda, we have what we call the Minister of Ethics and Integrity. The only country in the world with a Minister of Ethics and Integrity. Who to put morals into my head, I don't know what he's doing there. Anyway, so that ministry was supposed to give money for the printing of this. And where does this ministry get the money from? Isn't it the government? I don't know anyway. But what I suspect is that because international pressure put so much pressure onto Museveni, my president, on the government, maybe they might change and doesn't pass. But now he's in a dilemma. The religious leaders have motivated and told the public, if he doesn't want to put this bill to become law, we're not giving him votes to be president. So I have no answer for that.
So if the bill doesn't pass, will things get better or will they remain a problem?
Now, this bill passing or not passing, it has already done havoc. It's already spilled milk. Why? Because people have already been incited. If it doesn't pass, it's like they're going to revenge on us and say, hey, you have now pushed. I was in Sweden like 4 months back, and I talked, me and my friend, the lesbian, we talked to the foreign minister. And SIDA supports much Ugandan budget. So it came out that this minister said, Uganda, if you pass this bill into law, we're not funding. And even the election they are doing, they are using that fund as money, you know, money from you people here, taxpayers. So he said, hey, if you pass this bill, no funding. It came out in the papers. So Minister of Industry and something, he said, but you people here, do you have sense? You want to pass this law? How are you going to manage? If these people, they are funding, and they say if you're going to discriminate, they're not going to fund, what do we do? Horrible. Typical African, they say, we don't care about their funding. We have got our oil. We are protecting our morals. So, if the bill passes, it doesn't pass, there is already havoc, there is insecurity. People are going to be blackmailed. Police are going just to arrest someone because they need money. People are going to be detained, like we have always been detained anyway. okay? Killing all the havoc you can think of is going to be there because you have already been going through it. When we went to deny that we're not recruiting, 2 days after that, because I was on TV, I was on papers, up to now this arm is broken that I can't turn it like this. The bone went through the flesh. Just police wanted to arrest me. I said, for what reason? No warrant of arrest. But because they say I it's like pornography, that how can I go and advocate for whatever they call it anyway. So the bill passing, not passing, the havoc is already done. And I would rather leave it to pass than just moving, because if it stays there, like the Nigerian one, we don't know where to fall. We don't know what strategies to do. We don't know where to go next. It's just there always on tension. But if it passes, then many of us are going to find ourselves, many of my friends will find themselves either running to Kenya, getting out, others getting back in the closet. And you know what it means, going back in the closet, HIV. All this goes in there, down there. Okay? Then some of us, like me, I'm determined not to run, but to hide a bit, because I need to document whatever violence and discrimination is going to happen. Because if we fail to... Okay, my work, I think you heard that I'm an advocate and litigation officer. We compile up these cases such that we can appeal, okay, in maybe African court or in the international court if we are failing to inculcate some sense in our policymakers to see that they can put the Investigation of Human Rights, ICCPR, all this into the local. So I can't say that all of us are going to run away. I will hide a bit, but try, because I have to document these facts if we are to repeal the law in future, the sodomy laws.
Let's just talk briefly now about this organization that you work for, Sexual Minorities Uganda. What kind of work does it actually do?
It does advocacy work and lobbying mostly. And we can't just go into advocate for things that we don't know. So we always work hand in hand with some other organizations to see that we have data, research, mostly in HIV. How many people do we know that are LGBT and how many that are HIV positive? And how have they got it? Was it through curative rape? The lesbians, you know, Africans, what they do? They rape these girls and say they want to take out the spirit of lesbianism. So relatives, even the brothers, they jump mobilize boys to go and rape these girls. We have them. I think he has been there, he has seen. Okay? So we try to document all these facts. Now, when we look at the HIV, because some of the lesbians have got HIV through rape by these men who want to turn them not to be gay. So at least when you have the research from the HIV, we use that as an entry point, mostly to air out our views to the means of health, to say that at least we need to be inculcated into this and this. Because now it's the public... It's, let's not look at LGBT as we fight for rights, but it's the public... It's the public need that they consider, okay, all the aspects of a human being. So, was that your question?
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems that it's a very obvious point to make, but it's perhaps something that we should talk a bit more about. It seems like it's incredibly hard to push for gay rights. It's incredibly hard for SMUG, for Sexual Minorities Uganda, to be doing this kind of work. Perhaps we could talk just briefly about the particular issues that the people who work for SMUG actually face in their day-to-day struggle.
It's really not easy working in such a hostile environment. On a daily basis, you walk from your house, you are going to the office, anything can happen. For example, if I talk about myself, I was one day just seated at the bar drinking with my friends. Guys just came in and arrested me. I slept in police. In the morning when my lawyer came, he asked the policeman, what's wrong with this guy? And the guy who gave money to this police to come and arrest me, I had him when I was taken in the cells after removing my shirt and everything, saying, no, this guy is a sodomite. So my case is sodomy. By the way, you can Google my name. There's a case there, sodomy, because now we are reporting. We are opened up a case against the state attorney. So I sleep in here. In the morning, the lawyer comes. They say, no, this guy is gay. So they call me out. You guy, are you really gay? I said, excuse me, I don't think you have a right of asking such a question. That's my private life. So now when I went to court recently, before I came to York, I'm in York University now, they said that when he was asked, he was elusive. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that meant. Anyway, so it's not easy. For example, when these right people, they came, so much homophobia came up. They arrested some, many cases have been on. We tried to bail them out. But what is sad is that the couple, one is dead. A 20-year-old boy is dead now. When we went to, when the case was taken to police, the state attorney said, no, I can't sanction this file to go to court. There's no proof of this. Because they knocked in the morning, the guy opened the door. They said, where is your friend? He said, he's there in bed. So media all over, they take them. 3 weeks they are at police. They are taking, they are checking. Today they inject here, they are checking for STDs. Tomorrow they are checking for HIV. Eventually, they pushed the state attorney. Order came from above and it was taken to court. From court, they went to prison. Me and the lawyer, we go to check on these guys in prison, Maluku prison in Imbale, who refused to talk to these guys. Why? I don't know. When other prisons really allow us to talk to these people, we were not allowed. Now I'm wondering, the guy died after 2 weeks from prison. What was the cause? It's a shame. Just listen to this. When we go to court, the guys are there before they are given bail. An old advocate, an old man, my grandfather almost. When they say, could we ask for bail for these people? This advocate said, no, we don't have, magistrate, don't allow these people to come out. All the village tomorrow is going to be full of homosexuals. Leave them to die there. Said, excuse me, what is this? So when you ask me what we go through, that's part of what's really happening. But you ask me what SMAG does. Apart from advocacy and lobbying, at the time of the bill, what we have done is to work hand in hand with the coalition. We have formed a coalition to deal with the constitution makers. We couldn't go ahead as LGBTI, as SMAG, to go and fight this bill. So what we have done is to come up and with some other civil societies that are friendly, so they have put their face there. Me, I can't go to, I've been in these ministers' offices, so now if I appear, they say, he's fighting for those men who do whatever, you know what they call us. So civil society, we're working hand in hand with them. So we have had some public hearings to try to get a small dialogue, media to report a bit. We open up a dialogue to break the silence. And also work hand in hand with the non-governmentals. We are SMAG, we try to lobby Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Eastern Horn of Africa, and embassies. Mostly about the bill, because I now might get questions like, what have you done? So there are some embassies with the guidelines, with LGBT guidelines in them. So we have waived a visa, whereby if anyone is being targeted, they just have to open the doors and keep him and then give him visa very fast to move away. That's so far where we are. Although there are some other hindrances, like most of the people that have been in prison and now they are out. These are potential witnesses in the future. There's a confusion. Maybe I want some advice from here. I don't know where I'll get it from. There are some two cases who are being charged with aggravated homosexuality. One guy in Entebbe, he was arrested. State attorney said, no case, leave the guy. He just read as they demonstrated up to the parliament. And the deputy speaker of parliament said, take him back. So the guy has spent 4 months, now he's out on bail, but he's still reporting. Now my worry is, if the bill passes and this guy goes to report, is he not going to be taken? I don't know. They are true of such. So really, this is the type of situation that we are in.
Okay, and just finally, I mean, it seems that Sexual Minorities Uganda is doing amazing work, but what do you think it needs to do in the future, and how can it go about doing it if the law passes or if it doesn't pass?
Come again?
What kind of issues do you think Sexual Minorities Uganda will face in the future, and how can it go about confronting those issues?
That's if the bill passes.
Or if it doesn't pass.
Problem is that because of the laws, we have been really so stuck in making our structures into making a long-term visionary strategies. Because it's difficult to plan when tomorrow things are going to break. We've been shifting our offices almost 3 times a year. Today you're in this village, tomorrow you're in another town. Sometimes you realize that, who are these? These, they look like men. Are they men or women? They trust. This, so they begin. The men, they want to rape these girls. The police wants to make money out of us. So we keep on running up and down. So making long-term vision strategies has been not easy. But again, making our structures and really firm is really a dilemma for us. Although, what we are planning to do, like some of our organizations have tried to do, is to disguise. Like we are dealing in HIV, but when we are making awareness in some few people. Although we are a bit stuck with the resources that some of our people, for example, when you look at the arrests that have gone on so far, they are not in Kampala. They are outside. Kampala, we have tried to make awareness in our people. To know their rights, how do you deal with police? What have I done to be arrested? And you know some of these police, when you are really, you ask him, when he knows that, when he realizes that you know what you are talking about, there is get off. But when you cowardize, you can even sleep in there. So problems that we would have loved to bring awareness all over about people to know their rights. And this, for example, had helped us around town, Kampala, to gain people to gain self-esteem. We had come on board now. People have been coming out. But now they are again fearing. They are going started to go back again. So what we need is more awareness in our various our communities. That's important. But we are a bit limited with the resources. And the problem now is that more people are really, really just hiding away now. It's very difficult to bring someone and say, come and go, we talk about this. It's, my family is going to throw me out. The landlord is going to throw me out. The place of work, they're going to throw me out. If red paper gets me in time, they take my photo. So there are such red hindrances.
Well, thank you very much for that, David. I think we should now open this up to the floor and give people a chance to ask David questions directly. So if anyone has a question.
Hi, I was just wondering how far, why do you think people in Uganda are maybe being particularly receptive to this anti-homosexual legislation, and whether this is something that's unique to Uganda or you might find similar sentiments in other countries or regions.
What is
the question?
Why is Uganda being particularly homophobic? And is it something that would also happen in other African countries?
That is happening there. Okay. Much as I say that 85% of Ugandans are Christians and 12% are Muslims, most of the people in Uganda, they are really religious. Okay? That prompts them to not look at other factors of a human being, but to assume that they are so holy and they can't accommodate this. Now, you say that not like other countries. Nigeria, it has been there. Cameroon, Senegal, there are many that have been in there, in prison. So it's not only Uganda. Although, Uganda, you have a right to ask that, Uganda, they are saying that they want to set a precedent. Am I pronouncing that? Okay. What is it?
Precedent.
Yeah. They want to set the precedent. Because these fundamentalist countries, Muslim countries, they are the ones who are having such death penalties. And Uganda wants to be the first one to set the death penalty among all the Christians. So these pastors and whatever policymakers, they say for them they want to set the precedent that they are first one to cut out death penalty over gay people.
Kevin Ward from the University of Leeds, thank you very much for your talk. I lived in Uganda in the 70s and 80s, and I got the strong impression that the old sodomy laws of the colonial times were on the statute book, but they were a dead letter, really, or never really heard about cases coming. Now, that may have been my ignorance. But when did you think that it really that these laws began to be invoked in Uganda? How long has it been? And indeed, how many cases actually do get to court? You've talked very eloquently about the brutality of the police, but is it actually difficult to get convictions in court? And has there been any documentation of such legal processes?
Thank you for that question. Now, the time you lived in Uganda, I believe, or maybe I better go a bit backwards. Anyway, there is this tendency of people thinking that in Uganda, there are no gay people. It's the white people that spread it there. That's what they say. It's the white disease they are brought there. But if I talk about myself, who taught me? I never even slept with a white person. Okay? But I kept on at school that I kept, and I didn't also understand it. Okay? Until when I got to South Africa during Mandela's time fighting for the apartheid era, and then I got to know. But anyway, let's look at my kings. My king, I'm a Muganda from the central. You all know about the matters who were killed. You all know that they were killed because they didn't want to supply the goods. So about that, we are not there, we are there. We just became visible. People to be aware of that, I think it's not a mistake. When you look at the western part of Uganda, Ankole, a woman could stay with a woman for life, and they used to take them to be demigods, respect them. If they go to the mountains and they talk, whatever they talk, Dorine is going to come. How would we know what they used to do in those mountains? But anyway, when you talk about the documentations, for example, you can go Victor and Oyo Mukasa case. Victor Mukasa, she's working with the IGOAC, International Gay Human Rights Commission. Victor Mukasa and Oyo, this is another case that provoked all this, by the way. Police went and raided Victor Mukasa's house. Because they used to drink at the bar with this other lesbian, so they are followed, and police breaks into the house. Unfortunately, they found only one girl there. They took her to the police, they opened her neck, they made even a man to escort this girl. This girl looks like a real man. So she was escorted by a man, even touching whatever. Okay? But anyway, we opened up a case. By the way, we have a precedent that case we won it in Uganda, and Uganda was made to pay damages. I don't know if they have paid yet or not. Is there Uganda go Victor Mukasa? We have that case, okay? Now, this one provoked. They say, they are even winning cases because the judge, she was even a lady, who said, you know, the university, they were supposed to live in the spirit of brotherhood. First, she said, the spirit of sisterhood. Even if despite the fact that they have a different orientation, you didn't have right to go intrude into their privacy. Okay? And we won that case, which is there. So about the documentation, we don't have much. We have just started around 1999. We started coming up after really realizing that we need to fight and liberate ourselves. So that case is one of them. I've got mine, which is still in there. Then these other cases, they are the ones, okay, you say that, how do we win them? Really, these cases, it's a matter of making someone suffer in prisons. It's very difficult to prove them. Because you're not chicken. We're not a pig that I climb another way and everyone is looking. Okay? It's very difficult to prove them. It's just to humiliate people. These guys, that one who died in prison, when they are taken in prison, they told them, show us how we are doing it. Show us. Can you imagine? So the other said, please, they are beating us. Let's just pretend. Let's just pretend. So many of them can't work, and others is that maybe the officers, when they realize that they are just putting, like mine when I was taken that night and I slept there. My case says charges of sodomy, but I was at the bar drinking. How do you prove such things? So these are ambiguous, operational, discriminatory laws that we just want to put off once and for all. Hope I've tried to answer you.
Hi, I had a question regarding if the bill does pass, or if the bill doesn't pass and there's a massive backlash towards the gay community in Uganda, what I think one of the consequences will be are mass amounts of people claiming refugee status and claiming asylum. I think I can imagine the system at the moment perhaps wouldn't be capable of dealing with that massive influx of people so rapidly. Do you think there are mechanisms that you could implement now or work with now with neighbouring countries or other organisations to almost prepare for the eventuality or mass of people declaring refugee status?
Okay. You are saying, talking of if the bill passes or doesn't pass, yes, we know if it passes, we are going to be the losers. But that's another step ahead, that we have opened up a dialogue. International community is all concerned. Uganda is not a parastate. It can't live on an island. One day, somewhere, somehow, they have to be accountable. Forever is going to come up. Okay? I'm not talking like I'm stupid or hopeless, but I believe it's okay. Let them run away. They are going to be accountable. One day they will find their level. Because they are seeking to resolve these things. Don't discriminate. Don't whatever. I don't know whether. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. So otherwise, trying to lobby the countries where our people can run to. Okay, that's what you're saying. Yes, this isn't all. It's not easy, but we are working hand in hand with, I forgot the name of the organization that is willing to look at the asylum issues. But first of all, we just want to take people out to Kenya. That's if in Kenya they are really wanted there. And then when you take them in Kenya, they can sort out themselves. Who really wants to sneak in back and keep silent, go back in the closet, and who wants to really to go away? One time, Rwandese, they ran up to our country. We call them relocation. We located them. They stayed in with us. Then sometime back, we also ran. I was part of those who ran to Kenya. Then I sneaked back slowly. But again, you're right. We are defending people. I'm going to defend them. Okay. But it's not easy. Even the person you're really defending might turn up to be really stubborn and you really regret. I take like 10 of you to Kenya. Tomorrow you're busy saying, me, I never wanted to come. Me, I want to go. Now I book the bus, please. I'm trying to help you. So, seeking asylum, we have to relocate them first. Talk to them. Do you really want to go into this winter in Europe? Will you manage winter? They don't even know what winter is. So you come here 2 months and say, I want to go back. Now what do I do with the fund? How do we put the money into this one? So it's not really easy, but we are trying to negotiate with them. Although Rwanda, the Minister of Justice, pretended recent and said for them they don't have time for this bill. So it's very near. We are working with HOKA. HOKA is another organization. We can relocate people there. Kenya, we can also relocate people there. After that, then we can see where to take them. And problem is that some of them, they have never gone to school. They don't have any travel documents. I'm just trying to look around for money to give. Like, they're like these people who have been in prison, okay? In police, they're those that are really known. They are going to be targeted, I know, very much, if the bill passes not. But one time, let me give you an example. I'm sorry I'm talking much. I go, it was sexual health and sexual rights workshop. It was supposed to be in Uganda, but the Minister of Ethics said it shouldn't be. So Akinda Mama, they took this workshop in Mombasa. They had invited this trans. So when he doesn't have a passport, he doesn't know English. So when you don't have a passport, you can go through Port Bell and you can get a travel document. So when I go, the guy was putting like what you're putting on your head, something like this. So I fill the form, everything is filled. So when I go there inside to this gentleman, since we are through, here are the photos, the guy said, okay, remove that from your head. This guy had a puff. You know what a puff is. Long hair, tied here. The guy said, excuse me. No. I don't give travel documents to transformed people. Can you go away? I think he wanted to say transgender, something like that. He said transformed people. I said, I knew they were going to arrest me that day. I'm always dry, I'm always canny, but I knew they were going to. He started calling on those wrong things of the police. I said, what do I do now? So you see the situation you're in? You're even denied the travel document because you have hair.
Any other questions at the back?
Hello, I was just wondering what you thought were the implications for male homosexuals as opposed to female homosexuals if the bill passes. How will the bill affect the lives of gay men as opposed to gay women or the implications?
Will it affect gay men and gay women?
What?
Will it affect gay men differently to lesbians?
the thing with it. It's different, the way that
it's different.
No, as far as I know, it's the same. By the way, okay, men, we are mostly targeted by the lawmakers, okay? But my sisters, the lesbians, are worse off because they are targeted by public to be raped, to be beaten up and to be raped, and after raping them, they want to kill them. Hope briefly I've answered you.
I was just wondering in terms of how men and women have to deal with their sexuality. So will there be more lesbian women who have to marry to stay positive? Because in terms of how women are socialized and how they kind of move through life.
What I know, if you're talking about women lesbians.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, you know these ones, they really have a problem in that. You know, I'm from Africa, and I know how women can't really bargain over this. They have little power of bargaining about sex. That's African way of doing things. So, real women are more vulnerable. Okay? They are more vulnerable of all the risks. And mind you, they are mothers, by the way. It's really difficult. We have the bisexual people, the bisexuals. Okay? We drink with them in our bars. This man has got a wife. He has children. But he fears even to move with condoms in his pocket because the wife is going to find out and say, what's going on? So he goes with these other men. He gets the disease from there. He takes there. Another issue, by the way, in MSM, WSW, there's that thinking, people, because they're not aware that there's no HIV in gay people. Then in Africa, it's this. It's only in women. In the human reproductive system, but in men, you can't. So, men, bisexuals, they carry the ladies, and the ladies don't have that bargaining power to refuse men.
But the question as well was, would lesbians have to marry and pretend to be heterosexual if the law passes?
Because this is something which I can't really answer. Because you can't, like me, at my years, I'm 40 now, and you force me to marry. Maybe just to be a picture in church there. You bring your, you know, here the hours they give glasses, whatever. Just take them for free. But otherwise, what do I do in bed? There are some that have been forced to marry and they have got stroke. Up to now, one of my friends like this, he got stroke because he was pushed.
Pushed to marry?
To marry, yes. He married, but he ended up in two problems.
Of this is the influence of American evangelicals, which I understand have been very active in parts of Africa. And the Christian churches in Africa in general tend to be very conservative anyway. I think the only Christian church in Africa which has stood up for gay rights has been the Anglican Church in South Africa, probably because of Tutu's influence. But how much of this attitude is in fact long-term in Africa? How much of it has been stirred up in recent years by American evangelicals who seem to be very active trying to enforce in other countries' laws the Constitution and not let them enforce in their own?
Okay, before I come to you, the person that asked the other question, I think that's why there's much need about self-esteem, because if you are going to be forced to marry because you have to impress whatever, that means you don't have the self-esteem to fight for your right to defend yourself. That's why it's our duty to go ahead and bring people to make them aware of their rights and to gain self-esteem. Okay, then about these religious right people, yes, since they came, I think 2 weeks back or three, we have heard what happened in Mombasa by religious people again pushing because people were in a bad drink and they joked, hey, I'm going to marry this one. Then they arrested people. We have heard. They are now out of prison, I think. Malawi, we have heard. It's all the influence of religious rights coming to really push. It's called fascism? Fascism?
Fascism.
Fascism, okay? That religion really counts much. The Bible said A, B, C, D. For example, we all know about sodomy. Sodomy, okay, sometimes I assume that people they know. Because for us, we have grown up being pushed. We are supposed to do this religion in school and class. You are supposed to be, you know. So Sodom and Gomorrah, what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah? It was not consensus. These were foreigners who went to stay in this other country. So these people, they said, we are tired of them. They should go. How can we harass them to go? Let's demean them. Demean. They knew that if a man and woman, they're having sex, the man is supposed to be up, the woman is supposed to be down. So let's sleep on them. That's why these men slept on these other men who were foreigners, to demean them. You know, culture has always been that women are always supposed to be under the control of a man. So this is what happened. But now they just say that they brought it to Africa, and they are telling these people that no, homosexuality is bad because it happened in Gomorrah, Sodom and Gomorrah, and the city was burnt because of this sin. But this was not consensual sex. So what the just right people are really preaching is they are emphasizing on the homophobia that was brought by the Bible than love. I don't know what that was again.
Regardless of whether or not the bill passes, what do you think can be done, if anything, to promote acceptance of gays in
If the bill passes or the bill doesn't pass, what can be done to make people accept gay people?
Okay. Now, before I answer you, another thing which I can comment about the religious right is that we have to connect this into not only look up at religion, because not everyone anyway is religious, okay? And two, you can't push me to believe into what you believe, to respect the liberty of conscience, because it's one of the fundamental human rights. Liberty of conscience is one of the fundamental human rights. I believe none of us here still remembers how the test was when we were still sucking our mother's breasts. So what God has convicted me to repent, that is bad, I will. But if I sleep with a guy tonight and I don't feel my conscience, maybe if I cheat my boyfriend, I'm entitled to go and say, sorry, I cheated you, which you can't do, of course. Okay? So liberty of conscience really matters, but they don't look at it. Okay. The question was, if the bill passes...
If the bill passes or the bill doesn't pass, what could be done to actually...
remove this attitude?
Yeah.
You're right. We are really stuck. Because what has caused all this havoc, I believe, is the not having a dialogue. We have always asked our policymakers. I've really gone to their offices. Please, we want a dialogue. One day it was Chogam. I don't know what Chogam is. This was another international conference in Uganda, where even your prince came, I think. Yeah, your prince there was there. This Chogam, we went there. The first day it was fine. They read our literature, our books. The second day, pastors organized. We are even almost arrested. We are beaten up. Now, one of the bishops was there. We said, please, bishop, why don't you listen to us? If you say we're in the wrong, we need counseling. We need to say, okay, you come to the office. They don't want a dialogue. They don't want to listen. So you're right to ask, how do we inculcate some sense in these people, in the policymakers? Anyway, it's really difficult. Otherwise, if we are to change people's attitude, it must go back down in the schools where you come from. I'm going to give you another scenario, which is really very fun, because I'm talking to academicians here. We go to Makerere University. It's another very big university like Cambridge. You have heard about Makerere University. And the topic was homosexuality good? Homosexuality okay? It was put there. If you watch this movie, it's really sad. So we begin debating, talking about it. The doctor, medical school in Mulago. Doctors with their, you know how they pose with their things, those gowns. You know what came up? They came with Bibles. No, this is not right. There are some Muslim now, girls, with their things and those. No, they brought their Korans. Now, discussing with the medical students about homosexuality, I thought they were going to talk about HIV. Much as they say we are the people who are transferring HIV, we would have looked scientifically more than what they have believed in their Bibles. These are doctors, medical students. So you see where the journey is really very far. We're almost beaten up, by the way. We are four of us. We're almost beaten. Said, no. We can't allow this. You go. We can't allow men who do this in another you know, I don't want to talk rubbish here. You are British, because you are so disciplined about not mentioning such things in public. But you know what I said? I have just read somewhere, I don't know if it's India, whereby that culture, when they are keeping, they get dowry when the girl gets married when she's still a virgin. Okay? So what they do, even relatively, they keep on having sex with this girl, but not in the right place. I don't know which right is wrong, anyway, sorry. Not in the, you know what I mean. They do it the other side to preserve this one for virginity, to get men much dowry. So I told them, excuse me, what are you saying? You even straight men, in quotes, straight as they think, they are straight like a ruler. Anyway, heterosexual men. You also do it with your wives in what you think is the wrong place, don't you? And some cultures, they do it to their girls to preserve dowry. The women who were there, they shied away, they didn't comment. So, really, it's very difficult, but you have to go back to schools and just teach children from childhood how to learn to live with diversity, tolerance. Don't accept, but tolerance. Tolerate another, despite of what he is. Okay? So that tolerance will bring these people that are going to be doctors in future, teachers in future, nurses in future, not to be to stigmatize others without prejudice. Because it's still so much inculcated in us. Why do you think so?
On a day-to-day basis, does society think that when they see white people that they might be bringing homosexuality?
No, I think, for example, HIV/AIDS, they say it came up first in Uganda, isn't it? Okay, and where about in Uganda? A deep village, not in Kampala, not even the next towns, but deep, deep in the village. You have been in Uganda? Yes. One of the deep, where no white man had even been. They are not even going to school. Some of us were taught by whites from here. I was in England, I was in King's College in Budo. Okay, I was taught by whites. But these are people who have never seen even a white person. So do you believe that? These are what we call sentiments. Sentiments, okay? And because you people here in Europe, you have been so open about talking about these facts. In Sweden, RSFL, okay, I know what's going on there. They teach children, they know. Because they are so open-minded, they talk about issues, they prevent so much damage. People make what we call informed decisions because they know. But in Uganda, recently, they told UNICEF, remove the book. There's a book which they had put in primary schools to teach. It had some aspects about homosexuality. Okay? They said, this pastor, they say, I was there when they were condemning this woman from Ministry of Education who was there. Said, how dare you give our children to read this? They said, no, we just want them to get informed decisions. And no, they are going to put this into their heads, and when they come out, when they are mature, they want to try it out. So really, not easy. Maybe you give me some strategies that we can inculcate some sense in this. But, much as he asked me a question about civil society, please, we have this as a problem. Any non-governmental, any civil society that is trying to fight for LGBTI issues, that means it's promoting homosexuality, and the registration certificate is going to be withdrawn, deported, or put in prison. So how do we bring the awareness now? Are you not promoting?
I think the question was asking, do Ugandans presume that white visitors are gay? Is there a general presumption that anyone from abroad is going to be?
It's only in the pastors. It's only in the pastors who even pretend, like that pastor who is really pushing much, that he was in USA and whatever happened. It's only in the pastors.
Can I just add something there? But it's also, I think, in relation to what David was saying about like UNICEF and also USAID being seen, UNAIDS being seen as, say, a colonial imposition coming in, and it's that way that, that the Western thing works. It's not so much, I think, on the individual white person being seen in Uganda.
Should countries publicly denounce it? Should we be having diplomatic relations with officials? Some countries have even recommended cutting off aid. So I guess I'm wondering what your thoughts about what the international community should do in terms of this response.
The question is how want the international community to? Okay. My request as I move, I've been all over, is to ask you, the taxpayer, because we depend on your money there, are you really willing to push your money in the Ugandan government to advocate for the discrimination and violence against one sector of people? So you can push your government and ask them, look here, ABCD is happening, is that right? Okay? You can come up with petitions. After assessing whatever I've been talking, because I'm from the grassroots, I really know, there's a guy who died. When he was put in prison, after getting him out, I was going to Gothenburg. I had a conference. I left him sleeping in my house. When I came back 2 weeks, the guy died. You know what is appalling? They called me. Within a week, when I go on Saturday, the guy was in a coma in Imbale Hospital. I left them with money to go for, because the doctor said, no, this is meningitis.
Pronounce it properly.
Meningitis. Meningitis.
Uh-huh. So I said, oh, okay, they will check that. That was on Saturday. The guy died on Sunday, before Monday. The hospital, post-mortem, the hospital death certificate is saying he died of meningitis. A well-nourished body, but he died of meningitis. We forced for a police post-mortem. That one said he died of anemia. 21 years. Okay? Now, which is which? And these are the guys I told that they have been put injections. We don't know what happened. Poverty is bad. That really I wanted to cut out what we call, what do you call that? After you have buried someone, you have to remove the body and do it again. No, it's not postmortem. There's another, yes, there's another name we can need to say. There are only three specialists in them, and one, he does it with even, he has law. Not only seen that someone maybe was beaten, but even maybe it was psychological torture. It's called a pathologist. Pathologist, okay, who is very, very expensive. So that's those are the things that I'm trying to. What had he asked?
The question was more to do with. Don't I repeat your question? Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, my question was just. It had more to do with what you think countries outside of Uganda, how they should respond. Should we just be, you know, symbolically just denouncing the law, say the
right? Okay, fine, I get you. Yes, they can denounce Uganda because the governments up here, it's a matter of reminding Uganda to realize and recognize their obligations to protect all Ugandans, despite. Okay? So, one, remind them. You know, you don't force, things might become even worse to us defenders. So you have to be tactful. Two, show them. That's why we document these facts. Such and such a thing happened. What do you have to say? Okay, the rapporteur, human rights, were in Dublin the other day. She said, no, I'm going to report these three cases. She has taken them to Geneva. But she said to me, she has never taken a case, and the Uganda government has not reacted on it. So they can't push. So it's all pressure from all over. Okay? We can say, no, we're not funding, because when we give so much money to Uganda for health, okay? It's for everyone. Then why do you say these ones are not? For MSM, why are not these ones also included? That's why CID has come up to say, for us we are not. So, embassies with guidelines or LGBTI, we are working hand in hand in them to see that they can push the government to redo, either to stop the bill once and for all, but we don't know whether they are succeeding.
Is there a danger, though, that in some ways, if foreign governments intervene, that that only strengthens the resolve of people like Museveni, because it seems like it's a neo-colonial imposition that Western governments are dictating to Uganda what they should be doing? Is that a danger?
You're saying this, yeah.
Is it a danger that that if Western governments actually try and tell Uganda what to do, it
yes.
strengthens
Uganda? Problem is that recently they said that the government when Obama said, "Oh, this is odious," used certain term like odious, going back in those ages. Canada, they complained. I think also you people here complained. They said, don't tell us what to do. But they are not telling them to do something which is new. They are reminding them of their obligation onto what they have signed. Okay? These are the things which are already there. They are just being reminded. No wonder the rapporteur now for human rights is from, she's Ugandan. She's really stuck. Say, if I push much, they will say I'm pushing the Western. So, now what we are trying to do is to go through the African Charter. The African Charter. Because, you know, this when they are signing, they are really funny. I don't know whether I've got some people who are there in Geneva when they are signing. They smile, they sign with a smile. So the African Charter has almost the same things. Don't discriminate against anyone because of whatever. But I forgot one thing. Our policymakers in Uganda, they say they are almost denouncing some of these instruments. So long as what they don't want, by the secret behind this is, there's a question there, they don't want to see anything in our constitution saying sexual orientation and gender identity. Take note of this. They say we don't want to be like other constitutions all over, which say no discrimination, race, color, sexual orientation, gender identity. For them, they say we don't want to enter into our constitution. If not, we are ready to denounce these instruments. And they're really serious. They want to denounce. They have this in our constitution, in this bill, they have said it. But one wonders, Uganda, do we have a right of denouncing these things domestically? We don't. But they have a right of making what they call them. You can help me, I think you know what I want to say. Resolutions. You say, we are compliant, but then it can be pulled out. But are we really a parastate?
Any other questions?
I wonder if you could say something about the broader LGBT community, either in Uganda or maybe just in Kampala. I mean, is there a sense that people are starting to feel they need to organize, even quietly? I mean, is there a certain emerging activism amongst individuals? And would people know how to contact you, for instance, if they want to be involved?
Sorry, could you repeat that question? Sorry.
I mean, I'm wondering about the gay community overall. So individuals in Uganda, would they know how to contact you, for instance, how to contact SMUG if they wanted to be involved? And do you see a sense of people starting to feel, gay people starting to feel they need to be active politically, even quietly, but they need to organize, in other words?
Do local gay people who aren't involved in SMUG, do they, are they aware that SMUG is there and that they can get involved? Do they want to get involved?
Yeah, I believe many of them, you know, excuse me, you know, you know how gay people, it's unfortunate you are not gay, but we gay people, you know how we like gay, not in the sense of what we are, but being gay, happy. Just through a party, you see all of them coming. Okay? So there are really many willing to come on board. But this one makes them to run back. Because if a photo is taken and red paper media puts it out, it's going to be thrown out of the family. For us in Africa, we have what we call inheritance. When my father dies, he's going to leave me with ABCD. If they say, this one is gay, no more. You know, the question you ask me, they remind me of some other thing. Then I want to elaborate, and then one guy died and the father refused to bury him. We had to bury him at the mother's side. For us, we bury at paterno, not materno. But the father refused and we had to carry the body to the mother's side. Okay? So there's a fear. If I come on board, I lose my job, my landlord. How will I walk around? But of course, there are some people who are really courageous. Like me, I can't get back in the closet. I'm already in the papers. I think you have, it's not the first time you're seeing me. I was on your BBC, is it last week? I was in York, I saw myself. So there's nothing I'm hiding. And me, I'm a bit okay that if they just get me like this, I'm being monitored, they are going to be answering, where is he? What has happened? Okay? So again, much as you would love them to be on board, we need to go and make them aware of what they're supposed to do. Okay? Because now you know what you are going through. There is a bill, and you are busy playing around with a younger person. What do you expect? I also fear to come to police and put my head and some come to fight for your rights. So we really need just some resources to cause awareness. Like we have really done it within the last years. It's because of the awareness we have to cause that visibility has come up and the dialogue is coming up. Although on the other hand, I wouldn't mind anyone dying. I've always told people, this when they come doing research, I say, you know, when religion came to Uganda, before people died, it never took roots. I told him today, when you plant a seed, before it dies, it won't produce. So some of us, I know, we are going to die, I know. But at least that will begin with spark of, like Germany, it happened, I think. Our policymakers, they have not studied history, and they have not seen what genocide was coming up in Germany when they're trying to do the same thing. Okay? Then another thing is giving up. Maybe you thought we can give up. I don't think so. Because there's what we call loyalty. Loyalty. Because he's my brother, then I can't report him to police. She's my sister, I can't report to police. Am I more loyal to them than to my blood? This is ridiculous. Can it happen? Can you go and report your son? So I'm more loyal. So what you have to do is to make them realize the values in us. I might be gay, but I'm here in the village. So like the value in me and hate my gays, man. Leave me live in peace.
Okay, final question.
Thank you much for coming. You mentioned because Uganda influenced by Islamic and Christianity banned gay. I would like to ask you, do you aware that Uganda influenced by Chinese Communist Party, CCP, who persecuted its own people for truthfulness, compassion, over 80 million died in the last 60 years and harvesting organ going on because of this plea. So why don't you internationally mention also about dictatorship, suppression of Communist Party, and then Muslim country, Christian, respect you as a God. Hey, you giving the voice of 80 million, which ignored by Western world for economic reason, and also I know you don't believe in God. God give you hand, you show his miracle to you. Because if you go to every original of religion, not modern religions, but Darwinism, communism, original religion of Taoism, Buddhism, who believe in compassion, except this is a sinful world, but you can through cultivation, through meditation, you can get rid of the attachment, Islam, every human as well. Thank you very much indeed.
She's amazing, I think.
Yeah.
She's not asking.
Thank you for a very interesting comment. And I think at that point we should wrap up.
It was a fascinating discussion and really interesting questions. I think the last statements by David Carter were a stark reminder of a kind of resilience in the face of a very, very strong oppression, which is amazing to hear your optimism at the end of that, that irrespective of what prices need to be paid, that there was still a progress to the struggle that you've been so centrally part of. It was a really inspiring talk. I can only speak on behalf of everyone to thank you again, David Carter, for being here, for sharing your experiences with us, and I think bringing us a bit closer to a sense of how important and how urgent is this particular fight that's going on. Thanks to Dr. Andy Tucker as well for a great role, playing a role of discussant in this conversation. I just want to briefly thank Leslie Dixon and Oliver Lewis who were helpful in bringing us all together this afternoon. It's a wonderful occasion. I wanted to mention on behalf of the Center for Gender Studies the annual Gender Symposium, which on the 12th of March, it's Gender and Scales of Empowerment. We don't have any, there's no information available at hand here But if you just go to the Gender Studies website, which is gender.cam.ac.uk, you'll get more information about that. It's the 12th of March. It's the annual symposium, Gender and Scales of Empowerment. And Centre of Governance and Human Rights events coming up in the next couple of weeks on Angola next Monday, and then on corporate complicity in human rights violations in Africa the Monday afterwards. So it'd great to see some of you there. If you are interested in joining our mailing list, I'll just leave a piece of paper. You can just write your name and email address down at the end of this discussion. It'd be great to be able to tell you about our events as they come up. So please just join me once again in thanking David for a wonderful, wonderful talk.